What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to Fudge Muppet. I'm Scott here with Michael and Drew, as always. And today on the Elder Scrolls podcast, we are talking about radical ideas. And Michael's brought a radical haircut for that. Some fresh new change.
That's it. I shaved my head. I just thought it was on brand.
So?
Yeah, it's like, you know, lockdown, Mad Max. Get onto it, you know, prepping for the worst.
So radical haircut, man, where's the radical idea? The first one we're discussing. If you, by the way, guys, if you haven't seen the last episode of Radical Ideas, mm-hmm. we were basically talking about ideas for Elder Scrolls 6 that would substantially deviate from the formulas that we've enjoyed before. So it would be a radical change. And we're trying to assess whether they'd be good. We try and work with the ideas. You know, we're not trying to just dismiss them and go, nah, straight away. So,
yeah. So as a warning, a lot of these ideas are quite weird. And a lot of the time we will be playing devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Because in a normal setting, we might just dismiss them straight away. But we're going to try and not do that today. So let's have a look. Idea number one, Battlefield Tamriel. That's obviously a joke. I do have a whole list from Twitter.
I do have one if we want to start us off, because I think there was something on Twitter that was related to that. And I like this. I tend to actually like this idea. So I'll see where it goes.
So this is Battlefield Tamriel?
Not Battlefield Tamriel. There was another one exactly. On there. Then this one that was, I think it was a reply. It was talking about staves for stars. So the idea that when a staff runs out, a staff can be used as an actual weapon, like it kind of could be used in Morrowind and so on. So you could have like a, you know, a monk character kind of using a staff. But it reminded me also that there's a mod that, you know, changes up the compact gameplay overhaul, and then so you can use staves as a melee weapon but also as a ranged weapon. But it gives you in Skyrim a lot of freedom over how to use a weapon. So for example, you can choose to use a giant axe, a two-handed axe in one hand, or you can use a one-handed sword in two hand, and you can swap hands, and you get a lot more freedom over how you position the weapon and so on. And another great example of this is like obviously a game like Dark Souls, where you do have attributes that function into this. So there's like strength, but your strength requirement, weapons have strength requirements, but if you hold like say something has 40 and you have a 20 requirement of 40 and you have 20 strength, if you hold it in two hands, you can use it properly because you're using two hands, because your strength effectively becomes 40. And I do like, I was wondering if a similar thing could be applied to the Elder Scrolls, because I think it actually gives a lot of variability for like role playing reasons and stuff. And so like, for example, if you wanted to make a character who's like super strong, that's their thing, and you want to do something and get, so you're using like two-handed weapons, like you could invest your character and it might be almost sound like, you know, mythical or like clownish, but I feel like it could be cool.
It could definitely work. Like, it gives a lot of incentive for people to actually, you know, be careful with attributes and think about, you know, what they want to pick and why. It's like a weapon handling skill in New Vegas. You know, like you can hold a minigun and, you know, if you're really strong, it will be more steady when you shoot. You could have a similar thing with swords.
But then take the same principle that you could the whole shifting hands kind of thing, or being able to use, you know,
and just focusing more resources on variating the way each individual weapon works. Like, you know, say using a polearm, if they introduce spears and things like that, having more reach as well as having thrusting attacks as opposed to swinging attacks. Like, I remember ages ago we made a video about spears in the Elder Scrolls 6 and we added a mod. I thought it was hilarious running through, like, carrying a spear and just, like, hacking down at people with it. It's always ridiculous.
Well, like, because adding spears back would be good. Actually, funnily enough, in Assassin's Creed Valhalla, it's one of the perks and stuff you could get later is basically, like, easier, like, heavy weapon dueling. And I remember, like, I used, like, dual spears the whole time, and it sounds kind of comical, and you could use two heavy weapons. And it kind of can be. But even thinking about it from allowing a similar thing, you could have like a character using, you know, real world combinations such as like a big pole arm but a dagger as well in the other hand, like if it could be somewhat effective and freedomer.
It would also change up the way you deal with different scenarios. Like, you know, this won't be like Skyrim. There's, you know, they've said it a million times, the technology's advanced massively. So say you're dealing with cavalry, you've got horsed and like enemies riding horses coming at you. If you've got, say, like a billhook or a halberd or something like that, then you can kind of sweep the horse's legs out and then you bring the guy down off the horse. You're fighting him on the ground. And it's kind of like more strategic ways to approach combat. And I'm sure the same could be done for like mage characters using specific types of spells that are more effective, not just in terms of like weaknesses, but in terms of physically changing up the fight if you use particular weapons and spells.
They have a little bit of that in Skyrim, like with, you know, obviously frost magic, draining stamina and slowing enemies down in some cases, and shock magic draining magicka. But you could definitely see some more things like that. And I mean, speaking of staves, someone on Twitter did actually say that, you know, staves should obviously be overhauled, which we've talked about before in videos. They had some ideas like blocking with a staff could, well, they said should cast a ward that depletes magicka, but I feel like it would be better off as its own,
I think, as
its own unique staff or something like that. But you could have a bash. Imagine an area of effect spell with a, like you press bash and you like,
I think perhaps
hit,
we've
hit the ground.
I think perhaps we've started with like an idea that's probably not all that radical and is probably pretty good. But I do think it would be a radical
change.
How'd
you get here from Battlefield Tamriel?
Oh, no, it didn't.
So starves.
Literally the tweet you mentioned is what I was thinking of before.
Right.
And then that started starves and being able to use starves differently. And then the mod that you can use starves as a weapon as well, which I think is actually really good. Like, I think having a more player control over how you use different weapons would be a really good addition. And even think about like the applications for the ways to even use enchantments and stuff like kind of in that, like if there was a ward with a staff, if it's blocked with a staff or something like that. But like say a staff that has multiple different enchantments that are used differently when you you know, block or ward or whatever. But you could use a similar kind of concept for other weapons. Say you take the ebony blade and then in a two-handed form it has certain sort of striking patterns and abilities and different magical effects, or maybe not ebony blade, gold brand or something. So using it two-handed, you can like use like it shoots like little waves of fire thing as you spin around and do attacks or something, but in one-handed it functions a little differently. So even having the enchantment working differently depending on how you use and like different striking patterns and stuff could be cool.
On the topic of Battlefield Tamriel, what is meant by that? Like, what is the idea, like, having a multiplayer mode?
Yeah, kind of with like everyone running around on the map trying to kill each other.
I mean, look, so long as it doesn't detract from the single-player experience, having a Battle Royale mode would be canon. Like, would fit the lore pretty well, considering what they did with Elder Scrolls Arena, of, like, coping it in the lore as making it, like, oh, Tamriel is the arena. And then you've obviously got people like Boethia who like to have competitions. So maybe, like...
I mean, it would, back obviously it would be fun, arena. But it gets really tricky with all the different powers and magical effects you have in a single player game. For example, mass paralysis would just be the most OP thing ever.
It'd be like, you know, like a COD or something where in campaign every gun is amazing, but in multiplayer you have like a team actively nerfing and buffing equipment and stuff like that.
Okay, well...
Probably not a good place to put your resources, but hey, we're trying to play devil's advocate.
Yeah. We also have a concept of boats and just a general idea of like if the player had a ship that they could kind of modify, perhaps decorate, use it to travel or fast travel even,
if
keep companions on it, things like that with kind of a party management system similar to the Outer Worlds or Mass Effect where you have companions on your spaceship, things like that in the Elder Scrolls on a naval ship. Again, this is an idea from Twitter, so just bringing
Odyssey
it in.
Did do that as well. I mentioned it a little bit in the last episode, is that you kind of recruit people. Like, the idea was you recruit mercenaries to work with you, but they're usually manning your ship in Odyssey. And I mean, having the Iliac Bay, you know, say that Elder Scrolls 6 is Hammerfell High Rock or a portion of both, then the Iliac Bay could be the centerpiece of the whole game, in which case having naval combat would be a good thing to spec
into. It also makes sense even just from a travel. Like if you have like, oh, like a map and it's like, you can explore and go anywhere. And then like, imagine you can't go across the water. Like, or you know, or you have to swim manually across, like just like that across the Lake Bay. Like they would add other systems. And I think after games, like even as far back as 2015, like with Witcher and boat travel and stuff like that, even if it's single manned sailing boats, like I feel like they're definitely going to add something like that.
Like you just hop in and sit on the side and it flies across the water at warp speed as you turn the
thing on the back. I think so.
I remember being a bit disappointed in ESO because I was really trying to get good footage of Isle Balfiera and the you know, the Tower of Convention, and I was swimming out from the shores of Hammerfell and High Rock, and then after you go like 100 meters, it just kills you.
Yeah.
But you know, obviously, if you're gonna have like, I genuinely think the Dureni are gonna play an important part in Elder Scrolls 6, and if you're gonna have all of that, you might as well have it all be an accessible part of the map, kind of like every Elder Scrolls game has intended to be.
I guess
where you can just go from, you can climb that mountain.
We could expand this a little bit, and I guess this is what where the radical change comes in, but like a much larger sort of like companion / mercenary management system or something, whether it comes up to like kingdom management or pirate ship management, or basically management systems where, you know, say you can go become a pirate captain and go on raids and you have like, you know, your ship full of pirates that you manage like a home, or you become like, you know, a baron in High Rock and you have like a big fortress and you can, you know, man it with soldiers and do all that kind of stuff, like all of these kind of more dynamic sounds like such a dynamic, such a like pop buzzword that I remember hearing all the time. Every time I say it, I feel like
it's really hard not to be kind of like to shoot down a lot of these ideas, purely because when we think about Skyrim, we're thinking about the limitations of this 10-year-old game. But a lot of these things are doable now.
Yeah,
you know.
Mm. I think one of the biggest reasons we kind of come to conclusions about some ideas and prefer them over others is a kind of inherent, you know, idea about opportunity cost. Like we all know that focusing on that just does pull focus away from other things, and I mean, I personally would prefer all the focus put on a thing like that, just put into more like quests and cool things that I enjoy, as long as they're good. Like I don't want to just fill it with filler quests where it does feel a bit like an MMO. But it definitely could work. Like you said, they can do it. It's not a matter of does it fit? Like, it could easily fit.
One thing to consider, too, like, usually the big appeal of, like, more quests is that there are more, like, or quest choice, but just say even more quests or more guilds is, like, avenue for role-playing choice. But whereas you could argue, like, at least how I like to think about, you know, consideration of more radical ideas or big changes is like how it would affect and help the role-playing systems of it. So if you can functionally become like, feel like a noble baron and you've got your keep and so on, that enhances the role-playing in some way as ways to do things. Or if you can become a ship, you know, a pirate captain or something, like,
I guess,
for example, like our pirate build in Skyrim used to be a pirate. You can't really be on a ship anymore thematically, and then the backstory and kind of what they're like is like, you know, piratish, but you can't, and like roguish, but you can't actually be a Jack Sparrow. Do you know what I mean?
No. Yeah, and I suppose though, you just have to be careful with that, because I can imagine a bunch of Fallout 4 devs sitting around going, oh, you know, putting all this settlement building will, because technically it will, add to role playing. But it also detracted from role-playing because of how they executed it. Because obviously you can role-play as someone who runs a settlement and do all these different things there and have your little, you know, community going on. That's a form of role-playing for sure. But when it became too much of a focus of the game to the point where it consumed other elements like more side quests and more unique locations to find and characters to meet and interact with and do quests with, and, you know, then that's a negative.
If they can find the middle ground, it could be done really well. And kind of adding to that as well, like all of these, if there's going to be a lot more choice for ways to role play your character, it's almost like, you know, with Codsworth in Fallout 4, he's just got a list of names that he can call you by, so you can actually input your name and he'll say them. It'd be good if there's like a ton of nicknames and titles based on decisions you make that are, you know, that the game can register. To have people call you by nicknames based on your deeds and things like that is just a little addition to having all these.
To tie it back to, I think this is why there should be some kind of like in-game system of like reputation or title management, or also like, you know, some kind of control system for your companions or groups and so on. Because like, imagine even if you wanted to be like a merchant and you could start a merchant caravan and go somewhere, or you literally can buy and own a shop and so on instead of, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like those kinds of, it just gives it many, many opportunities and avenues for role-playing that are otherwise hard to do without some sort of systems there to help.
Speaking of which, we actually had another radical idea that talks about that. The idea of owning your own business, like starting your own meadery or tavern somewhere. They also mentioned the idea of poisoning the inventory of an innkeeper and having customers randomly get sick and or die, thus driving business to their competitors, which in this case would be you. Reminds me of Ruthless. The quest in Skyrim, where you do that at Honing Brew Meadery. Although you don't really drive customers elsewhere, you just get their operations shut down. But it's a similar concept. I mean, it's one of those things that I think sound nice on paper, but I'm not sure how you would implement a system like that across the entire map without just having, like, set pieces more. I mean, unless it is simply, like, you just go into a tavern, find their supplies, apply poison, run away, and, oh, everyone's dying. I mean, you could. It's just...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm also sure, like...
I don't vibe it intuitively. I don't vibe it, but, I mean, it is what it is.
I mean, maybe I'm a simple man, but there's a fairly basic thing you can expand on, which I really liked from a role-playing perspective in Skyrim, is just having... They could be more fleshed out or kept simple, but having a variety of odd jobs you could do. Like, you know, just chopping wood or picking up people's, you know, going through the farms and picking up crops and then selling them on. And just, like, having basic things you can do that kind of show, like, the early stages of your character's development and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember in Fable 2 talking about taverns. You could own a tavern and it would be a really basic mini game if you wanted to actually work there for a bit. But I found it really satisfying, like, oh, I've got a normal job and then I'm going to be able to buy the house in the courtyard. It's like elements like that that are just completely unrelated to quest lines.
Like some of the what I would if I was to say put focus, I would say on like maybe less of the, my preference would be less of the intricacies or less of the smaller, more mundane things or more of the fun. For example, like, you know what's a really fun thing? I'll bring up Kenshi again. But I started this whole base and so on, and I started farming and making a hashish farm. And before I got the funds to do that, I would have to travel through this one area to this big swamp land to buy lots of hashish and travel back to this other area where they buy this dry desert area where they buy it for a lot of money. But having a system where economic things are of different value in different areas and being able to be like a merchant or have a caravan or go on, I think is kind of fun and gives you reason to go and explore different areas and so on. But that's like an example of like a job that factors into like the part of the world, which is this open world sandbox where you're going to be exploring or navigating through enemies or doing things. So it actually becomes part of whatever thing, or same as if you're being like a pirate lord, you're going around exploring and attacking other pirates or something, or if you're, you know, raiding ships, or if you're a baron, you're interacting with maybe other armies, or like, you know, you're going after, say, like, you know, bandits, you're rooting out local bandits or something. I think like maybe a good guide would be to flesh out things and systems like that factor into the rest of it, like the open world, the combat, the so on. Whereas if you take something that is maybe just like chopping wood, it's such a, like, maybe it's harmless and you can't add it or something.
That's the thing, it is I agree with you, but it is harmless. Like if you could go somewhere and pull out a fishing rod, but, which they seem to love, and catch some fish and sell them for 5 gold each, then you can do that.
Yeah, for sure. But what I mean too is, I guess, the in reference more so to the complex, like, you know, being able to like poison certain stops and, you know, shops and make other people not come and yada yada, might be a...
Like less cool. Disconnected pieces and more things that relate back to other things, basically. And I mean, look,
well, I guess
Drew,
that works from just elaborating on it, you know, like being able to buy the lumber yard at some point, you know, and then, and if, say you have destructible environments, which we're not necessarily in favor of, but you know, if you buy a lumber yard and you expand it, then the trees around it will be felled and there'll be you know, it'll become an open space.
You could do that for some areas. If you choose to do that, it doesn't really matter if some trees get cleared. Like,
it's like a quest and consequence.
I mean, you could have your Daedric realm that you wanted. Your forever tavern where you just live in there. You get Elder Scrolls 6 VR. You sit there, it's your tavern.
But don't actually, that might be, because here's one thing that happens to me in Skyrim. Money's easy. You go around and buy stuff, sell it. You end up with huge amounts of money and really nothing much to spend it on. You know, you buy homes. But instead of just being able to buy player homes and stuff, if you can buy places like shops and stuff like that, but say you can...
I'm just putting my hand up like a child in class. But sir, I was going to say that kind of will just all, even though it can help role playing, it will just give you more money. Like, so it'll be the point of, oh, so I can use it for something.
Yeah.
Like buying a business, which gets me more money, and then you have the problem of not enough things.
But it's different
to spend
when
money
you can, when you can, if there's so many things. So for example, say you go off and you, or you can buy you know, businesses and stuff like that. What would be cool though is if you can actually like upgrade them. So say there's just static levels of like 2 or 3. So say you buy a lumber mill and it's there. And then you upgrade it and it expands more, and maybe a new NPC or something comes on and trees around get cut again or something. And then you can expand it a third time, and that gives you different revenue and so on. And apply that same mentality to different like alchemy shops or so on. So say you could go in a city. Say you love this one city a lot and you want to be thane of it or whatever. Say it's Whiterun. But then you go around to all the stores and you end up buying up stores, but then you end up like investing in them and upgrading them, and they have new stock and inventory and so on, but they also make more money for you and so on. So you can like basically uplift areas. Like imagine if you could be like, I'm playing some charitable guy and I'm going to Riften and I want to put all my money invested into the city and help it upgrade. So there would be already pre-programmed like static visual upgrades and new NPCs and stuff, so it's not, it doesn't get ridiculous in like, you know, I'm hearth firing every single house. But then it allows you to upgrade different cities, and then you get all of that money, and then you can go like, you know, put that towards your castle or whatever, if those kinds of things are like really high value, if it's like millions of gold rather than like 2,000 gold here.
I know this is a feature in many games, but for some reason I'm having flashbacks to Assassin's Creed 2, where you actually took control of, you know, that estate or that city?
Yeah.
And you like could buy like a store for it, or you could put like a brothel there, or like all these different things that would have different benefits and things in the town.
Yeah, but I think maybe investing
investing in cities sounds interesting.
Yeah, and investing in just things in general, so it actually gives your player like a way to affect the world visually, and it will change it visually. So it gives you just another goal for your like money and stuff, you know.
Okay.
Oh, well, sorry, real quick, is also guilds too. Investing into guilds and upgrading. Everyone gets excited when you upgrade the Thieves Guild. Same principle, but for other halls. Sorry, go on.
What about phantoms?
What?
Phantoms.
Phantoms.
So, you know how every game is Dark Souls?
Oh, my God.
Having a phantom. So, I was just thinking about my tavern, and like, it'd be good if an IRL chum could come over to your tavern. But you wouldn't want multiplayer. Like, we were just talking about the Battle Royale mode. Multiplayer would sap energy from the experience. But what if you have something like a Souls-like Phantom system where a friend or even an invader can come along and interact with your world? Because it makes sense from a lore perspective, because they're coming from another Cowper.
Like,
what, do they just open out of a portal and hop out with little
from a parallel place? Like, they just... Yeah, maybe. Or maybe they come as Daedra. So like you create your character at the beginning of the game, and then you create a Dromora or a type of Daedra as well. But that's only relevant when you engage with a multiplayer aspect.
I mean, you could. It's just... It's
you should. Why, like, why not? It's not a super
the
hard
one thing is just
implement.
Any way that I wouldn't want anyone to be able to come into my world and screw it up. Do you know what I mean? Like, imagine...
No, it'd be like
but that's
invite,
true to an extent.
Right?
Sorry?
Wouldn't it be invite-based? Like, permission-based?
No, he's talking like Dark Souls
not
on your
necessarily.
Open
like, proper just come in and ruin your world and
I mean,
go
look,
away.
You
I wouldn't
could,
like that.
You could do a invite-based only system, or you could have, like, a game mechanic, kind of like the humanity system, where if you die, you spawn with slightly less health. It doesn't need to be this. But a way that lets you be invaded and invade, and a way that you can't be. So,
maybe
because
if you want to work
about
with,
having, we talked about having bandits ruin your experience, take your gear, and then we ended up deciding that could
but,
be a
but
cool
that,
idea.
But that is different. That is different in a way that, like, for example, the bandit stops and then like they take you, they leave you like for dead or whatever because they've taken your stuff and they don't care about you or whatever. Like, you know, instead of a dude stabbing you and teabagging your corpse or something, or like, you know, killing all the important characters in your world or whatever. However,
I think there would need to be limits on what they can do.
Yeah, but then it might be like, what's the point? But however, what if imagine there was some sort of Oblivion Realm or something, or some kind of system that functions more like, I guess, like, you know, like kind of playground, a multiplayer playground or something. Even if you go with the idea that Oblivion's got time is different there, and, you know, God's living outside of the concept of time or so on. But then if
Bethesda is listening to this, please don't do multiplayer.
Yeah. But to work with it, right? Just imagine if there was some sort of like Oblivion realm system where there's different, you know, realms where you go to, I don't know, if like you were saying before, both this realm or something, but if there is a place where, like, there's a common ground where people can interact and change things and stuff like that. I want to go.
So kind of like your Myriad Realms of Revelry.
Type Join up for deal. A raid with my buddy. It just sounds like MMOs, you know? Like, it doesn't... Yeah. I feel like it takes away. Like, multiplayer, I feel like, takes away. Well, hold on. Well, here we go. Do you want to absolutely do...
I don't want to hear any words that make me feel like I'm on a Twitch stream.
Here's the most radical... Well, a really radical idea that divides a lot of people, right? And that's co-op. Like, the concept of, like, just full-on, straight-up, not invasions, like your sort of toy mat or anything, just straight-up invite someone to your world and there's co-op happening.
Okay. Here's a way you could make it work using Skyrim as a template, right? You could have a system where you have a player character and then their companion is like exactly that, a companion. They're not the Dragonborn. So in dialogue, when you would go to the Greybeards, for example, they would be like, oh, you're the Dragonborn. And it seems you've brought a friend and like whatever, but the same thing happens. And then when you go into kind of enemy zones, I guess they could just increase both in different ways to balance it all and make it work out. The difficulty and the amount of enemies that you come across. And you could take your friend, companion through the entire Skyrim storyline, really, as long as one of you is Dragonborn and one of you is just there to tag along. Otherwise, you have to design the whole game around co-op.
It could be like...
Which, yeah, you could do, but...
I think in Fable... I think it was Fable 2 they introduced it was co-op, where it was basically just the other person came into your world as like a henchman or whatever. They just helped. They had no interaction with the NPCs or story. It was just like basically all combat kind of stuff or exploring and stuff. And you could... I'm pretty sure you could get loot. I can't remember. But like... You know, and that could be fun because I feel like what are people when they desire co-op, for the most part, they're just desiring to explore the world together and do stuff in the world together and so on. However, like obviously, like with the actual factions and quest lines, it gets complicated.
Yeah, it gets confused. Yeah, like what rank are they in a faction? Like, are they rewarded by helping a Daedric prince? Like, it gets tricky.
But Michael, you got to remember, these are radical ideas.
That's true. And I am the radical
man. You're too
rational.
You're too rational.
I'm trying to think. Because the easy thing too, by the way, to circumvent the whole, like, don't have some chosen one story, and it makes co-op much more, much easier to approach if you don't have some sort of like, oh, here's a Dragonborn character and here is a
But it's still weird because like you look at like factions have nothing to do with chosen one in terms of progressing through the faction.
But
like,
imagine
you take
maybe,
Oblivion, for example. What are you doing the assassination missions together?
Maybe instead if... maybe instead if there was a co-op option for the game. Like, you start, but you can't, like, play it non-co-op, if that makes sense.
I honestly feel like the least invasive way to do this is to have them be a summoned Daedra. Like, honestly, that is the least invasive way to do it.
Yeah, but I think people would... But, like, that, if that much effort's there, would you get the same... Like, part what people want to do... At least this is what I would want. If you... In a magical world where co-op was really... It all worked perfectly.
It is a magical world,
to be fair. Yeah, true. But, like, I would want to start... It would be fun. For example, if you could do a three-player co-op, and I started with you guys, and all of Fudge Trumpet starts this one, like, save file, and we go and do things, and you can even split off in the world, and then you can come back and do other things, like, even, oh, go join this guild or do that, so on, and interact with everything. It would be fun to run around and explore the world together. Even it's not really like, I don't think that if you use Skyrim's combat, especially, imagine the combat would be better, but I still imagine it won't be as good as actual combat games as of its contemporary time. So I don't think the fun will really be in like, oh, fighting each other outside of like silliness and stuff. A lot of people want from the co-op experience is like experiencing things together and like going on, having a Fellowship of the Ring experience, essentially. You know, they get party together and they go do that thing. Now, people would argue this is just Elder Scrolls Online or something like that, but maybe then again they would say back, well, I don't want all of the MMO-ness to it. You know, I want it to be like a co-op experience, like, you know, for a party of people, you know, probably something more akin to the, not in terms of the loot and everything else about it, but like how Borderlands isn't an MMO, it's just a group party co-op game, you know.
Yeah,
that can be played single player as well.
But it's a lot more fun co-op.
Yeah, but that's what's strange. It's kind of hard. But like, you know what I mean? Like, you can see in some magical world if it was done well, like because it's...
Yeah, which... Yeah.
It's like maybe it could be executed well. Because if you actually look at a lot of Skyrim's quests and stuff, they're very simple. There's not a lot of choice divergent. There's not a lot of... it's just very... like.
But all the dialogue would have to be changed.
But all of the dialogue already is generic to account. It doesn't... like whether you're Argonian, Orc, Khajiit, whatever, but most
no,
of...
But it, no, but it's not. Because, like, okay, like here's an example. Like it's very... the dialogue is very like, you did this, then this happened. Like take the... A Night to Remember quest, for example. Like you pass out and they're like, so they have to change the dialogue. So instead of, oh, you did this and that, and then, oh, and your friend did this and this.
I just don't think you have to mention that necessarily. In the same Skyrim, what I'm trying to say is most quests are for a generic person to come and do whatever.
Oh, they,
it
yeah,
changes
yeah.
a little bit for the guilds, but you could restructure that. And of course, the main story. But that could be shifted. But for most interaction things, it wouldn't matter if you went and did the whole like Aranda quest and got the Daedric artifact here and the other one did Night to Remember. Or even if your friend...
But would you be ignored?
I think it's probably the safest way to do it.
That's what I'm saying. So they wouldn't really have a good role-playing experience as the player too. Because no one would be looking at them and speaking to them ever. They'd be like an invisible
person. If you're in the same spot. Like you'd be talking. I guess it just wouldn't be group conversation. So you could be speaking and doing that thing. But like the one weird part is if you have any time skips, for example, like if you passed out drunk and did that quest, like... you imagine if you actually had to be asleep for the 8 hours of like the in-game time or whatever, while because the rest of the players are still able to do stuff. You can't just skip forward or load back and stuff like, you know what I mean?
Oh, I mean, I think you just teleport to the next part of the quest.
No, but you're not this group bound kind of thing. If you could explore the areas, whatever.
I suppose.
So, you know, you go do a Boethia quest and I have nothing to do with it. I go and do this and so on. But existing in the same world allows you to get together and like, oh, you make a house together.
How would you deal with loot?
Well, you just simple as go in, get it. First, he grabs it. Like, because it...
First, he grabs
it? Yeah, okay. Because it would just be a very MMO... MMO
that
feeling.
That would potentially be difficult. Like, I mean, Borderlands is a very different game, but obviously in Borderlands, a big part of loot is kind of the randomness, right?
Yeah.
Whereas we would obviously want Elder Scrolls 6 to be very, very much like intentional with loot.
Loot's also like the centerpiece of Borderlands like game structure. It's all about that. So they had to throw that kind of stuff in. I feel like a lot of the time when you have... you know, and even co-op stuff, like you could imagine, like, oh, one of you becomes the mage and one of you is like not, and then, you know, they enchant your warrior gear and stuff and you sort of bounce back and forth. And
I feel like the idea of having two players on a big map all doing different stuff isn't that exciting, because you may as well just be playing in different worlds, talking to each other about your experiences. I feel like the main appeal of co-op is to travel together and do all the same things.
It is. I just mean that would be an option if you wanted to. Like, you don't have
to. Maybe it shouldn't be.
But, like, what? You're, like, tethered to, like, a 10-meter radius of your other guy. Like, that feels awful. Like,
not that.
Because it's not like playing Halo co-op where you go through, like, one level and your next... Do you know what I mean? Or you just get teleported forward.
But imagine if the radius was, like, massive, or instead of a radius, it just simply stopped you from accepting... new quests in their world, and I don't know.
But you'd
anyway.
Have separate quest logs and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, but this is why it would have to be slightly changed. Like, look, ultimately, this would be better fitted as like a different Elder Scrolls spin-off game, not like an Elder Scrolls main title thing. But it's a radical idea.
Like an adventures game, a linear Elder Scrolls adventures style game where it's 2-4 player co-op kind of thing on linear maps.
Yeah.
Just doing
a
story.
Or at least it may be a bit more linear, but... I still like the idea of open world exploration. I mean, speaking of, here's the next idea from Twitter. I want to be able to have the option to have numerous companions in brackets 2-7. Obviously, more experience for solo players, but the option to just have a gang or entourage would be really fun for more grindy dungeons. So I suppose, like, I'm not necessarily opposed to the idea of, you know, in New Vegas, how you could have kind of like a companion and then another kind of sub companion. I'm not against those kinds of ideas, but I think the idea of running around with 7 companions gets a bit tricky, particularly with like the kind of dialogue I would want them to have, which, you know, goes beyond what we saw in Skyrim. You know, in Fallout 4, they comment on kind of specific things like, oh, I think there's a sniper up there. Imagine the absolute like clash of, you know, different dialogue lines, or even if they programmed it so they all take turns, suddenly like you getting a watered down experience of all seven versus, you know, one.
I'm trying to imagine the stealth. Imagine trying to stealth through a dungeon with seven companions.
But that would be the trade-off, I guess. If I was to try and push for it, you wouldn't be able to be good at stealth.
I think it comes back to, for me at least, the need to have an attribute system for a lot of these. Because attributes allow you to work with a lot of systems. But I kind of like the idea if you had some sort of attribute or not. Like, some sort of like charisma or some kind of trait or something. And maybe that would allow you to have more. I think seven's a little excessive. But say with like nothing, you could have one companion, right? But then say you get to a certain threshold, there's two. And then maybe at the top threshold, you can have a full party of like three other people following you. But the trade-off there in terms of your attributes or what a foundational is, if you've, you know, a creation or whatever, or however it works, you've invested a lot in a character who's able to do this thing. So if you wanted to be like, you know, a healer role or a bard or something, but there's a trade-off for having lots of companions and so on. And look, the honest thing is,
it still feels super OP.
I mean, look,
like, even with the trade-off,
I mean, I'm sure you could function away that like the trade-offs, but like, this is how it works in like, you know, even in Outer Worlds, like companion characters, having more characters often works out the best. Like, investing high in your companions just worked out so well in Outer Worlds. Like, it was one of the better builds. Or same thing. But I feel like it just gives you the options, the role playing and stuff. And you could try and balance it in ways, but I'm not opposed to having more companions. It could be argued that it's like, oh, just two like full characters or...
Well, as an extension of that, would there be leveled characters? Like, leveled companions? And maybe if you have more companions, you've got like an EXP share Pokemon kind of system where your companions don't level up as fast. Say you just prioritize one companion, they're much more useful to you in the long run than having a slew of them.
You're always trying to bring it back to Pokemon. Last radical ideas was, what was it, like Pokemon Turf Wars or something?
No, it's kind of like, you know, catching mercenaries to serve.
How about then, imagine if instead of like an actual like artificial companion limit, what if it was actually based? Maybe there would have to be some eventually, but what if it was based? Yeah. What if it was based upon like a total level? So say you have like a really high charisma, you can say have like 100 levels worth, and you can divide that up by having like a level 80 companion and a level 20, or you could have like four level 20 companions, or you know, 10 level 10 companions
that
or less
sense.
But that, because as a way to balance up the power a little bit more, and obviously it wouldn't be perfect, but maybe using that, so it allows people like, oh, I want a small like army of ragtag bandits, so they're only like, you know, level 10s or 20s or something,
and they can be disposable, and you lose them on certain fights if you're not careful with how you manage.
Yeah, potentially. And maybe that also leads into what we're talking about before. If you're like some baron character and you have a small army, maybe if you want to be a baron character, high sort of speech or charisma or whatever kind of thing allows you to have a higher level threshold, so you can have more units under your like command or control or whatever. I feel like there might be a little bit of a have to be a little bit of a fluid system between what you'd call like companion, as in like a fully developed character and so on, and like followers. You could just call followers. So followers might be capable of dying, they're like mercenaries or more generic characters or knights or whatever, whereas the companions are the more Fallout style fleshed out characters that companion you. And you can have a combination of both, or just one or the other or whatever. And I don't know.
Well,
maybe that could work out. I think then maybe some sort of system that's not just an arbitrary number. Because if it's just a number, that could change things, whereas something like level or something would balance it, perhaps.
Well, the next idea is plumbing and sanitation in The Elder Scrolls 6, which is extremely radical. That is the most radical idea so far. And I would be completely happy for it not to be there, because I just got it. I got used to it not being there, like that there's not toilets in people's houses, but I don't really mind.
It's kind of weird because there is.
Well, there should
like
be.
Like, only in Riften there's sewers. Like, there's no toilets, but like, what are they throwing in the sewers? Like, sewage, like toilets, a treatment system. And like,
and the Imperial City have the sewage.
Yeah, exactly. And sewage has been around, and like,
sewage has been around for a long time.
Yeah, I
mean, people have been shitting for years.
Yeah, but they've been shitting in a coordinated way as well, and in certain places to make cities
I guess that does come back to the survival elements, like maybe having, and you need to go to the toilet. You know, say you drink a lot of wine to get your strength up, you know, your charisma's down, your strength.
Or you like when you smash all those cheese rolls or the cheese wedges, exactly. You're like, quick.
Your character is lactose intolerant. Yeah.
Look, it kind of gets to like what, like, I think that you don't need it. It's the same as just like that kind of like world builder's disease. It's like, how does this race shit and where do they shit? We need to know, like, do you know, like
brushing your teeth or...
Yeah, or like there's some wiping. Things that you can just leave to bro, it's a game. But I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to like, for example, sewers in every single city or something.
I mean, sewers are an interesting environment. Gosh, we sound so pro-sewerage. It's weird saying it, but...
That's such a funny phrase.
It's the exploration. This is the Fudge Muppet podcast. We've been pro-sewerage. You two are very pro-deforestation. I just want to be able to chop all the trees down. We're full of radical ideas today.
Yeah. Our channel is full of
crap. Look...
Watch it.
I'm not sure I'm all that on board with it, really.
Good suggestion, though. We do appreciate it.
How about exploring the origins of the Dwemer, not their disappearance?
I don't think I would mind, actually. That's a good way to approach it. It's funny because this is a more lore related thing, but if in Elder Scrolls 6 they did do this, I wouldn't mind it because that's just providing a little bit more clarity on where they split from the rest of the elves, or if they did, or if they were there from the start, kind of thing, or whatever.
It's interesting to, and I mean, you wouldn't have to use this concept too heavily with this idea, but the whole concept of like, when you answer a question, give two more questions to be answered, so that there is still more mystery being added while shedding light on the topic that people are curious about too. You know?
Yeah, for sure. And I think too, like, you know, you can always provide more answers and then go, unreliable narrator, could be wrong. Like, so it's that kind of... good system there, but I think that's a satisfying way to add more to the Dwemer without, you know, like I say spoiling it, because it's never, the idea is you never want it to be spoiled, but it's like the great mystery that I feel if you explain it, it would be underwhelming and probably poorly done. Like even in our real world, like a lot of the fun mysteries of the ancient civilizations is that it's really hard to ever sort of know fully or
yeah, the theories about them are cool and they would be well done. It's just why bother revealing it if the theories are already there?
There wouldn't be cool theories enough. Anymore. There would be a definitive answer. That's the problem.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
And right. Yeah, looking backwards is okay. Like, I mean, you could even theoretically have some snow elven influence or like some interaction with them in the next game. If you have a lot of high rock, say you have like the Druidark Mountains, you can explore there. Mm. It's not impossible that you'd encounter snow elves and you could learn about their origins as well, because that's another elven race where we don't really know where they originated from, if they split from the Aldmer or if they were always there.
Quick thing, I can't remember. Did we do an alternate star as a concept for Radical Idea last time?
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a really normal idea.
Well,
it's not an ideal idea. Yeah. Right?
I mean, it would be radical to Bethesda in terms of like design structure in the way that you wouldn't just be like railroaded along this sort of main quest. You would instead have to find the main quest through a more organic means, and perhaps there'd be different.
I think it would be easy to do on a fairly like rudimentary level, like not having it be drastically different origins, but very slight different ones. Like, you know, as much as Cyberpunk didn't commit to their origin stories at all, maybe having slightly different intros or just having different dialogue come up.
Yeah, like if there was
interactions based on which alternate start.
If there was three different like beginnings almost that like linked up at like, you know, the 3-4 hour mark or something to a common main quest entry point.
What if you actually just had kind of like a system like the mod where you can use the default start, which most people would pick to begin with, and that still allows it to be somewhat iconic, I guess. But then you do have like a long list of other places where you can just start, but it's built in with the game and it is kind of canon, I suppose.
It's one of those awkward things where, you know, like say, for example, arriving by boat in any of the ports or like starting off at a tavern, that's great from a role-playing perspective. But I can't imagine Bethesda wanting to give people the freedom to for their first experience with the world to be from a random location.
Yeah.
They want to set it up so that even if it's not certain, you're probably going to see that range of mountains first, etc.
Coming from my perspective, at least, I think, like, man, you don't have enough faith in your game if you're worried that you need to handhold and be like, look, this game is good. Big dragon at the start. It's very, like, in your face. It's like, I would be, at least in playing Elder Scrolls games, you're excited by just being in the world, and most people go off in any direction anyway or go and see.
But I feel like it really helps with the more, I guess, normie audience, in the sense that us three and everyone listening to this will love, so long as it's good, and play the Elder Scrolls 6 no matter what. But if you have some big set piece,
it's so big. Elder Scrolls 6 is so big. They could release
My point is that they will do better the more iconic their game is, and the more people who maybe have never played an Elder Scrolls game hop in and they're like, whoa, this is awesome, as opposed to hopping in and being like, I'm in solitude. I'm outside a tavern.
Do you know what? I would almost argue that iconic doesn't even necessarily mean good, in the way that, like, lots of things, we remember them. The Helgen thing is like, oh, I've got to start through Helgen again and I've got to run through it and so on. That's why it's like, haha, it's iconic, because it's like this sort of tedious thing everyone had to do every time they start the game.
I don't think that's why it's iconic.
It's why it is still...
It's a meme.
Relevant. You know, like 10 years on, it's...
But like, there are so many memes really liked that throughout opening. Everything. I don't know,
it unfolded heaps of lore to you about Ulfric, the civil war going on. Like, you saw the Thalmor there with the horses.
Yeah, exposition, great. Like, it's like you could also go into the world and explore differently and get exposition of different things. Like,
I'm not against alternate start. I guess I'm more justifying why I think Bethesda will do it, because I think that ultimately it does definitely appeal to a more general audience to have what they can decide is like, this is the perfect opening for our game. I would like there to be the option to pick other options. Like I said, like, I would love to be able to start somewhere else, especially on my first playthrough. I would like to have the option, but I can see why they might be hesitant to do so.
Yeah, why they're hesitant, but I mean, just from the design perspective, I don't think it makes it necessarily better that they do have some big, like, cinematic...
Not better from our perspective.
Yeah, but even from normie perspectives, like, you get, like... Do you know, it's funny, most normies I hear that play Skyrim, like, you think that, like, oh, it's the normie thing when they're first casual player and they pick it up and then they follow the main quest. They don't. They go and explore stuff and just do random stuff. And sometimes it's almost, to me, I'm like... But you're supposed to do this, or you're supposed to go here and see, like, how haven't you been here yet, or whatever. They're like, I don't know, I just went down this way and went, okay, and found this. And it's like, that's from a lot of more casual perspective. I think if anything, people who are more into the lore and stuff and the story will go like, oh, where's this guild? Where's this quest? I want to do this and so on, because they already know it. Whereas the normies just want to go out there and swing a sword and do cool stuff.
There's kind of a simple solution to that. What you could potentially have, you know, say you were railroaded into starting at a specific location. One thing Skyrim did, obviously, is you come out of the cave and you're immediately, essentially, escorted to Riverwood. And from Riverwood, you're sent in the obvious direction to Whiterun. Everything unfolds from there. You could have a situation where, you know, you have your initial set piece that becomes iconic and you escape it, but you're not guided anywhere. Maybe you're not given any waypoints, and instead you have to go to a nearby village, you find a random village in any direction, go to a tavern, and that's how you find out from a rumor where the quest should go. So that way everyone gets their ability to kind of go off in a direction.
I suppose. I mean, it's not necessarily a bad idea, but I think it's very different to what Scott was envisioning anyway, in the sense of, like, truly starting in, you know, the other side of the map. Only thing is, it becomes, and I'm fine with this because I actually like exploring before just rushing the main quest, but imagine starting in Solitude or Dawnstar and having to walk all the way to Riften to see the dragon as part of the alternate start and go, oh, I saw the dragon, and then kind of like walk, you know.
I think one of the here's a really radical idea. Imagine no main quest. Because I think the main quest tethers things. No, like, direct main quest in that sense, that it's all like kind of guilds or like even like Civil War-esque type things.
Do you mean like no ending
in there a is sense? No like railroad from like A to B, and then at the end Alduin dies, Exodus thwarted and so on, but it's rather like more like guilds or like you can resolve civil war or there's all that other kind of stuff. Because funnily enough, and this is what it, you know, I'm not entirely for this, but there is a case to be made that like a lot of the times I'm playing the game, you avoid the main quest or it's not relevant to your character or you don't really want to do it. You do it once or twice and it's like, okay, you're done. Whereas, you know, a lot of the time I will go and do is like play the different like Daedric quests and the guild stuff way more. Like these are the appealing parts. Like if you were to ask anyone, I'm always going to like go to Skyrim, what's your favorite part? Main story ranks pretty low. It's all like the guilds and the Daedric quest and the exploration, all that kind
of
stuff.
I don't know. When I'm thinking back to Skyrim, one of the biggest appeals for people was that you are the Dragonborn power fantasy, which obviously we're not massive fans of having a set piece character, but it was the very like Fusrodar memes and...
But that's just the memes and stuff that came out of it. I think people generally still just really got... Like the shouts was part of it.
Maybe even build up to it slower. You know, like the stakes are so high from the very beginning of Skyrim, and you could always have it start off really mundane, and then as you commit to the quest line,
if you want to commit
to it. Otherwise, you could avoid, maybe the main quest can be avoidable altogether.
I think a good thing as well when designing a main quest, because it's, you never want it to be too story focused, which often is done to increase the quality, because then it reduces the role playing in a game like an Elder Scrolls game, because it has to be, you know, focused around, like look at Fallout 4, how they make a more personal story and suddenly the types of characters you can be are reduced, and I don't want that. But it would be interesting if they made a story that, you know, could fit anyone better, because it does feel silly when you're the sneaky Argonian Dragonborn. You know, like, I guess you could say Oblivion's story was more, didn't define your character as strongly. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, you still had to rush into Oblivion Gates and fight Daedra. But basically my idea there would be like, keep the main story, but have it, like Drew was saying, you know, not so urgent, and keep all the good stuff that you were talking about, Scott. But just make sure that the main story isn't as overwhelming. But I think you can still make it better than Skyrim's main story without it.
You can. By the way, I'm not arguing that. I mean, I'm indulging the radical idea of having no main story, and instead, and could you actually make a game?
You could. You probably could make a game, like, because I mean, I hardly do the main story now when I do new playthroughs. Like, there's no point. Okay, so this is more of an open-ended one. No more kid gloves. Everything costs stamina. Stamina affects everything you do in combat. It's not a very specific radical idea, but it's kind of like we could work.
Sorry,
with
what
that.
Was that again?
So basically like stamina affecting more things, and more things being reliant upon the stat, because it essentially is just used for sprinting and power attacks. Although it is used for the sneak rolly stuff and... I don't know. I suppose it could come down to like perk stuff, like you had in Ordinator, where it was like you do more damage with this power attack per point of stamina and things like that. But I probably wouldn't want to overcomplicate.
I can't remember if in Oblivion, it was every swing cost some fatigue, or is it just Morrowind?
I forget, but I know I'm pretty sure jumping did. If you just jump, the little bar would go down.
Yeah. I can't remember. Like, I don't. That. I don't mind it. I don't mind the idea of like some sort of like stamina sort of preservation sort of working for you in combat. Like, especially for example, maybe if there were sort of systems like we talked about, like cripple systems or stuff like that for body parts or something, that, you know, maybe you're more vulnerable if you are like low stamina or so on. And maybe that like factors into a play style if you are some character that's like a high risk, a high reward sort of run in and DPS kind of thing and flurry and try and overpower them. But if you know, if you fail to finish them off, you might be pushed back and problem. But
so, I mean, maybe a way to refine that idea, and this has led me to a different idea that I really like about Ghost of Tsushima, is potentially having a reason to change your gear. So if you go into battle in heavy armor, you're expending stamina from moving, from running, from swinging, etc., etc., Whereas say you're traveling around or you decide to just wear leathers or furs or something like that, I actually think you should remove or like extremely heavily decrease stamina costs on everything. So you have motivation to change your gear. Like in Ghost of Tsushima, it's really cool. Traveling around, you wear traveling attire. And it shows, it reveals more of the map as you're exploring and new locations and whatnot. And then just before you get into a fight, you change into your samurai gear. And it's, I really like that aspect. And maybe you could tie stamina to your perks and to what you're wearing.
I suppose a kind of middle point could be like smaller things. Like if you're wearing heavy armor, power attacks cost more stamina because you got to swing, you know, your whole body into it wearing heavier armor. Obviously, you'd want perks probably in that perk tree that reduce the cost massively so that you have the heavy armor juggernaut expert who feels like, you know, as light as a feather despite being covered in metal. But that, you know, is something to strive for, perhaps not something you start with.
Once again, if we had things like attributes like strength or something, that would also factor in. If you were some high strength character, then you could walk in heavy armor. Like, I kind of like the attachment to the stamina cost, like you're saying there, and giving a reason to... And this is giving a reason, kind of like we talked about a little bit with, like, you know, the idea of climbing, that, you know, obviously you wouldn't be climbing around heavy armor because it would impact you greatly. But basically giving you different... reasons to use different gear other than just like, oh, whatever's best, just put that on, you won't really be punished. But it's like there's trade-offs, you know. If you aren't head to toe in this heavy ass Daedric with a giant battle axe and a shield or whatever, like you do have some drawback in some components. So that whereas if you want to play some like light roguish kind of Three Musketeer kind of character with a light sword prancing around and like delivering quick strikes, you can, and there's an actual advantage to playing that way.
Yeah, because it got to a point in Skyrim where you were kind of just, there were like clearly better options once you maxed the perks.
Yeah, well, I mean, they even had problems, like, for example,
with like you're making dragon scale really strong and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
Well, like light armor became the best because they had a armor cap. And like once you got, you could cap out like light armor, and then you have the benefits of light armor without the drawbacks of heavy, if there were any. Like, you know, like also things like stamina, like you got 50% stamina regen or something like that.
There was some good light armor perks in Skyrim. Some pretty nice stuff in there.
But I'm definitely all for like kind of systems to make use of different gear sets and so on that actually like factor into playstyle, not just a simple. I think gear and build and playstyle, it all gets a lot better when it's not just this simple like up and down. Like here's the worst light armor, here's the best light armor, and same for heavy armor and so on. Whereas if there's like actual other metrics or something to make functionality different, you know what I mean? Like kind of.
Because. Just as a general point, and you know, this might not be popular, but I think stamina bars are extremely annoying in general when not relevant to the specific scenario. Like, this is just me personally, but I almost like the idea of if you're not doing anything consequential, like you're not in combat, you know, or you're not surrounded by enemies or something, just get rid of, like, I wouldn't even want the stamina bar there. Say I want to explore and not have to fast travel anywhere. I don't want to sprint and then have to wait 30 seconds or literally wait in game. Sprint again, you know, there are mechanical elements that I don't like about stamina bars.
I definitely know what you mean, although I do like the fact that I would spec into stamina more so that I could explore better and run further and have that kind of experience for a character. I mean, it is annoying. It could feel silly though. Imagine you like have this unlimited sprint function when you're not in combat, and then suddenly enemies come out and you just get like gassed really quick and you just completely tanked, and you're like, oh, it's the adrenaline of combat, I'm so nervous that I can't keep my keep it together. I don't know.
I think it's, what are you thinking? I was just thinking, I think it's in the Imperius mod. One of them, I think it's either Redguard or maybe it's the Steedstone, that you don't travel, when you travel outside of combat, you have unlimited stamina. So you can sprint for it. I think it's the Steedstone, actually. Yeah.
I mean, it could work. It's not like you sprint much in combat, right? Like, you usually, the stamina is being taken up by, I mean, maybe a sprinting power attack to begin it, but generally it's power attacks or slowing time with a bow and zooming and all that type of stuff.
I mean, one thing about traveling in general to encourage not fast traveling is putting more emphasis on mounts, not in the ESO way, but in a more realistic fits the world way, you know, whether it be having horses that, you know, kind of like most RPGs do now, where you call your horse, maybe you can have a few of them stabled and whatnot, or, you know, and have mounts of different, you know, like a guar or something like that as well. Yeah,
yeah,
I don't know. But obviously not with like a million different flaming Daedric variants and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have the Draga Guar. And it'll have glowing blue eyes.
Yeah, it'll be I can't imagine them not doing something like that for travel and so on, like the horse whistle system and stuff. I feel like it's just people are so used to it and comfortable with it now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can definitely have different types of horses as well. Like I even remember in Oblivion thinking it was really cool about hearing, I think the white horses are like the hardiest and the strongest, but the black horses are the fastest.
I can't remember, but they had
all different types of
attributes,
things like,
because I remember you could even do it, because I think it's in Assassin's Creed Valhalla, isn't it, where it's like a slot. It's in Assassin's Creed where it's like you just put your, like, you swap out your mount slots and you can call them like unlimited and so on. But like I feel like a similar, how does it work in Red Dead again? Something similar, but I can't remember. There's so many open world games now where people expect that I want to be able to call a horse and go on it. I feel like, you know.
Yeah, in Red Dead, you have your main horse that appears on the map, and then you can technically pick up any old horse that you find. And if you put the effort into taming and befriending it, I think it can then become another one of your horses or something like that. But that, I mean, that was a cool element of Red Dead 2, was going out into the world to track down rare breeds of horse that had like superior stats or something like that.
That's cool. You could maybe tame a unicorn, like I think in Oblivion you've killed the last one, right?
I don't know if it is necessarily the last, like, one. I think it's just rare. One that's there, yeah, that's rare.
Let me check that, because I just remember something about it.
I feel like ESO had some comments about unicorns that were added that were a bit unusual. I'm not sure. But wasn't there a hint that they're kind of like Daedric creatures as well? Or they could be Daedric creatures?
Yeah, well, only because they're from... they're all throughout the hunting grounds of Hercene. They're said to be there, so... Yeah.
So you can have an unlimited supply of them. Theoretically.
Yeah. I can't actually remember. I don't want to spend time trying to source it now.
Well, I reckon we won't. But like, definitely, that's something overall in regards to like stamina... playing a high functionality in combat and so on. Don't know if that's necessarily radical. I feel like that's a move towards a pretty decent system.
I mean, the original comment was a bit more radical. It was kind of like make stamina involved with everything type of idea. But I mean, yeah,
What would you want it involved with?
I don't know.
Probably things like, imagine your stamina decreases higher with like a higher encumbrance rate, like if you've got more in your inventory,
so just like a bit more complicated mechanics than they maybe need.
Which, by the way, hold on, I do kind of,
not the worst. I would win from that system because I'm generally not a hoarder. Unless we're doing a let's play, then I'm the hoarder.
Because I do like interactive, all the different systems interacting, because then the more systems that are interactive and stuff, you could do that. You can always look for fun, new, unique niche builds and so on. But when you've got very segmented and separated systems, a lot of the time, you know.
Well, that could encourage sleep. Maybe your stamina bar drains quicker or is depleted in general if you've gone days without sleeping. That encourages to either return to your player home or go to a tavern or something like that.
I'd rather just the benefit from sleeping, but I don't really mind.
I mean, but when you know what we're talking about, weapons and being able to switch hands and so on, and that affecting the damage. Same deal with in Dark Souls, how it works, whether you're kind of like that light, medium or heavy weight. When you get to a certain level of encumbrance, it changes things. But arguably that would be better than just like all the way up and then boop, all of a sudden that's the, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back, and now you're stopped or really, really slow and over encumbered. But instead, if it was actually a progression, but that works differently in Dark Souls. It's based on like what you're actually physically wearing, but you know that depends. Like, it's weird to imagine, but Elder Scrolls with like rolling and stuff like that or something like that. But I just,
it's weird how you can lower your encumbrance by eating food in your inventory, because you're not really shedding the weight, are you? You're just kind of changing it and putting it somewhere else.
You're gonna need that sewage system.
It reminds me of that I really liked, like, just circle. In terms of like fun builds, like if you wanted to be a barbarian. But I know in Dark Souls, like the character I first beat the game with was this like really light barbarian fur character, and I made it so he could roll and it was the most flexible, but he had this like great axe that I used, this really big thick axe. So it's basically just like your stereotypical barbarian character, but it functioned well because there was actually an advantage to wearing the light armor and being the barbarian with a big axe versus just, you know, if you're playing Skyrim and you've got all the perks and stuff, it's no different really. May as well heavy or light armor.
All right. How about the player should be able to become an Animorph through ranking up in the Mage's Guild? Straight from the depths of Twitter.
If you're trying to make that work, I'm sure there's law precedence, because I'm pretty sure.
All I'm thinking of is the books, like the joke.
Yeah, of course. But there's a law precedence there for like some sort of like transformation. I'm pretty sure even some of the Glenmoral witches have been ravens at points or something. I can't remember. But I guess what they're kind of asking is like, you basically want to be able to turn into like Raven and fly around or transform.
And scout a bandit settlement.
Or like turn into a wolf or a rabbit. And I'm not entirely opposed. Like, I feel like it could be an interesting like realm of magic to use and explore. Like, if, for example, if you're going from like, you know, I try and think like, is it a role playing thing? But like, if you can make a more druid like character, like, and specialize into it, people would perhaps enjoy it. If you could, because it also, you know, I think it's got cool applications there. Could even be, you know, yeah, I was just thinking it's interaction with the Bosmer and shapeshifting, and maybe there's,
I feel like before they did anything like that, they would add more were creatures would, I mean, be the first
that
thing
would be
do.
my hope as well.
I might even lean, in that case, I might even lean towards the actual changing into something else, because I think it's a different experience. For example, like, as cool as they are, and I like them visually and so on, but like a werebear to werebear to werewolf is all going to be very similar, unless you're picking something like a were shark swimming in the water,
vulture,
or a werevulture.
Werevulture, yeah, you could fly.
Yeah, you could, but what I'm sure sort of getting at, I think.
Do you really think it would be a different experience to be like a rabbit versus a fox? It's like, whoa.
No, I mean like being a raven.
More being
or something,
like the being tied to,
yeah,
the moon,
like,
and
feel,
stuff. Would
I feel
be
like the classic witch turning into a raveny type thing or something would be.
Yeah,
cool.
You could imagine it like Assassin's Creed. Yeah, where you just like switch to a bird.
So you know, we're talking about like versatile sort of like areas. You know, there's like, you could maybe like levitate, or you could climb up it or whatnot. But also like, you could turn into a bird and like,
oh,
go up,
gosh,
there and, yeah, like, instead of.
I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking more about like using it as a visual aid, but like, you could actually travel with it if you were to go through with that idea, which,
yeah, if you literally
can get a little bit crazy,
like a polymorph,
you just
kind of thing.
You could fly up to the throat of the world and say,
you could turn into a rat and just hang out in the sewers as well.
Yeah,
or maybe that's the thing, I mean, a gameplay
with all the cheese
thing,
on its
like
way.
You know, being like a rat or a mouse, small kind of creature or something, you'd be able to go through.
Well, then we should add environments to sneak through as a mouse.
Well, that's what I'm saying, it's like environments where you're inconspicuous, you can go through. Like, I don't know. Like, so it's not that bad,
like,
idea.
I'm just imagining Bethesda developing like all these like little mouse holes and like little mazes to travel through to get into a room.
Fudge Muppet.
If you have, it's the same with most traversal problems go away if you don't build it around this idea that you have these segmented, like loaded in areas like they do in Skyrim, where you've got like, you know, it, like, for example, as an alternative to go into Riften, if you turned into a little rat and followed the cheese, like, you know, and you sneak past the guards and then turn, you know, instead of grabbing
them or whatever. It's not for a Radical Ideas podcast, it's all right, but Scott, I'll ask you in a week, do you think we should be able to turn into a mouse and zoom around in mouse holes in Elder Scrolls 6? And we'll,
you got
to
work with,
you,
these ideas, you know?
I'm
providing the best, you know, alternatives to... the best way it can, like, you know, smoothly work. And I'm trying to, like, give it all the benefit of the doubt. Like, there are a lot... there are ways that it would improve roleplay. Like, for example, like, even if you were, like, playing some, like, you know... kind of like sneaky thief character, but you invest in like whatever magic it would fall under. I don't know what school it would necessarily fall under, and you polymorph yourself into a rat. It could be a cool kind of character. or a bird or something, or like a druid thing, or even if you just, you know, I don't know, a bear. I'm not sure, you know, I think people would like, yeah, it could be a cool thing. But
well,
No, it is rad.
I believe that brings us to the end of the podcast. We can potentially do a part three at another time. Probably not next week, but I do have more ideas to go through still. Like that I could think of, and you know, on Twitter there's always plenty of suggestions floating around. But thank you everyone for watching. Social media links are in the description below. If you want to help Scott get that cheese after he turns into a mouse, our Patreon links and merch links are down there too. And we look forward to nerding out with you again very soon.